Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, welcome in everybody. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here. Jaguars Today just kicking off on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Ryan O'Halloran, how did you spend your bye week?
Did a whole lot of nothing, which was the plan.
Yeah. Big fan of nothing.
Yeah. I tried watching college football. I fell asleep. I went to a movie.
Does the game itself bore you, or did the matchups that you were offered not entertain you?
The matchups weren't great. Alabama and Mississippi State for a great matchup. It wasn't an interesting game. I think that's your phone.
It's just buzzing away.
And then, it takes a long time to get there. But I would have loved to watch Miami Florida State if it didn't start at 8:30 at night.
But it's Saturday night.
The big fella needed to slumber.
It's Saturday night, man, big fella. All right. Well,
but it was good. I'm sure as you'll agree, it was, especially after the trip we had. It was good to have like 2 or 3 days where you just could relax a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we never relax around here, do we, Tony? We're always on the razor's edge right here on Jaguars Today. Are you kidding me? There's no rest for the weary and the wicked on Jaguars Today. So as far as the team goes, well-timed. I mean, from what you can gather, you know, talking to guys, I know we can't see a whole lot of practice at this time of year, but was it much needed for them mentally, physically, all around?
Probably all around. I mean, it is, there's only two of the teams who had a later bye. That's Pittsburgh and Carolina this week.
Yeah,
you consider 6 weeks of camp, 10 weeks of the season, you've been going for 16 straight weeks. So I think from that standpoint, it was needed. Physically, they were going to get Lewis and Colvin back anyways.
Right.
So not a big difference there. But I think maybe they needed it upstairs a little bit because they just weren't all there against Dallas. I don't think. So we'll see. I mean, teams coming out of the bye this year are 10-16. So it doesn't automatically mean success. But very soon to see. I mean, the Colts have dominated this team since Gus got here. Everybody knows that. Does this team come out of the bye, let things fly a little bit, have nothing to lose up there?
Yeah, we'll find out, I guess, coming up. What about Colvin this week? Debut, what kind of role? What are we looking at?
What's interesting is that Gus sort of said one thing and Bob Babbage said another thing yesterday. Gus has been pretty adamant he's going to be their nickel, which with this team means you're going to play 65-70% of the snaps.
Especially in this game.
Yeah. And then Bob yesterday said that, well, Sherrod Martin would be the nickel with Colvin a little bit. So I think you're probably going to meet in the middle. They probably, you know, if you want to split those snaps 25 and 25 or whatever, you're definitely going to see him. I mean, the only other thing we're paying attention to, does Dwayne Grotz start after last week's arrest? I mean, do they sit him down for the first couple of series as punishment, and that means Colvin could start?
What's your guess as far as that goes? I mean, when they say they're going to handle it internally, I don't get the sense that they're going to do that. I don't know that. That's just my hunch. What do you think?
I know he was fined significantly for missing Monday. That could be several thousand dollars. Haven't heard any rumblings that he would not start as punishment. I think Gus probably would have revealed that, but maybe they're keeping that under their hat a little bit.
What'd you make of that whole incident?
Well, there's very few times in my journalism career will I be able to ask this question. Was the bubble gun part true?
And what did he say?
He said, I'm just looking forward. You know, he didn't.
Oh, come on.
Like, I mean, that's your opportunity. You know, he told guys that it wasn't true. It happened at 5:55 in the morning. I'm guessing he didn't get up early.
Right. He remained up.
He remained up. So the pluses, the positive out of it is he didn't take a swing at somebody. You know, this argument didn't escalate. He didn't try to evade arrest.
He didn't try to steal something. You know, he just he did something
dumb.
He
was in a stupor.
Kind of silly, more than anything. And the dumbest thing that was done there was not taking advantage of the free pass. Go, leave.
Yes. I mean,
when the man with the badge tells you to go, yeah, it's time to go. You just go.
Because looking at the address of the place he was at, it looks like it was within a hotel or by a hotel.
Right. That's what the story seemed to indicate.
So the cops probably say, go up to your room.
Right.
And he said, nada. And they said, well, you're going to another room.
Yeah. All right. Well, I've heard it will, they're not going to bury him in, sticks of gum until at least next week. They're going to let it simmer.
Well, yeah, I mean, somebody asked me that on like Monday or Tuesday, and I said, probably not with this group. You know, it's a little, you know, maybe a little sensitive for a little bit, but I mean, I hope to see a bucket of bazooka in front of his
at least eventually. Come on, you know, it's not like, again, this is not something that I think is some great stigma that he's going to carry with him. Yesterday, read your reporting on the Justin Blackmon latest pleading. No contest to possession of marijuana, misdemeanor possession of marijuana. If he doesn't get arrested for 6 months, goes to disturbing the peace. I would think that doesn't matter, the classification, because he pled, in terms of the NFL, what they would
probably
do
not
with him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're still going to treat it as some kind of violation of the drug policy, I would think.
Yeah, and, you know, if his camp, if his camp felt that would have impacted stuff, he probably wouldn't have, you know, he probably would have done some other things besides just pleading out.
Right.
You know, his thing is, it's been a while since he went 6 months without appearing in the news. So here's your test, pal.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. He's got to do that. But, did you speak with his agent directly or?
I did not. It was a new name, his attorney in Oklahoma. It was a name I hadn't recognized. So when I did look it up, came up a couple of times in Oklahoma City. But it was, you know, it was interesting how the player fled and the attorney spoke. I thought that would might have been a chance for Justin to maybe say he was on the right track. So
he's not, I mean, I don't think in those situations he's very comfortable. I don't think, you know, the first
time.
Well,
he should be used to it.
Well, all right. I get what you're saying, but that doesn't mean you're good at it. You know what I mean? He's had, unfortunately, multiple occasions to have that opportunity, but I just don't think he feels comfortable, you know, with the cameras and the microphones on him. That's my sense. But regardless, what the attorney indicated is now he's trying to work out, you know, do everything he can. We don't know anything more, though, about the process of applying for reinstatement at this point, do we?
No, we don't. And you talk to people in this building. It's the way the league has set it up is, don't call us, we'll call you, and that goes for the teams too. Which you can. I think that's BS because he's under contract with this team. They should be involved in this.
They should know when the process is going to play itself out.
So, but. You know, when he was suspended, where we're looking at now 54, 55 weeks ago, we originally thought minimum first 8 of 2014.
Correct.
So this year. Then it carried into the summer and, you know, and Gus and Dave had basically said they don't expect him at all. So nothing's happened in terms of the suspension that has been surprising yet. The next hurdle for him is he eligible to participate in somebody's camp in 2015, because from his perspective, you're already going to miss a year and a half. Now you're getting into that part of a third season. It gets tougher to come back the longer you sit out.
Right, the layoff. When you say somebody's camp, I mean, to me, there's only one camp if he is in somebody's camp. It's going to be right here. And do you think that there's a possibility that he returns, but that the Jags relinquish his rights or trade? Why would he be in anybody's camp but Jacksonville's?
Well, I go back to the night of, second night of the draft, and, I'm not alone in thinking this, is the look, on Gus's face when he said, can't trust this guy. To me, it was over. I mean, I think they're trying to save him as a human being right now, support him that way. Would I be surprised if he's with this team next year? No. I also wouldn't be shocked if once he's reinstated, they say, hey, you know, we've supported you through all this, but we're ready to move on. And there, that's well within, you can.
Oh,
totally
it's certainly
understand
within their rights.
And I would totally understand that too.
I guess I would be very surprised if they would go to the lengths to support him that they've gone to. And then just get nothing to show for it on the other end. Just to do it out of the benevolence of their heart would surprise me.
Well, I mean, he paid for the rehab out of his own pocket.
I understand that.
So I mean, monetarily, it hasn't, cost them. But
I'm not talking about monetary. I'm just talking about the offering support. And the sense I get is that they have let him know that they're there for him for anything he needs to help him along this path to get better, right? I mean, support from that standpoint. If you're just going to cut a guy loose and you really don't care at the end, whether it's him or anybody else around, I can't recall an example of a team going to that length. And maybe there are some, to offer moral support, if nothing else. And then once that guy clears all the hurdles to get back on the football field, say, well, now we're done with you. It would surprise me. Put it that way. But anyway. Today, as we do every Friday, we'll take a look at your keys to the game, keys to victory, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of automobile dealerships. What are the three keys for the Jags to beat the Indianapolis Colts? We'll get into some specifics here coming up, Ryan, but is this a game you go into thinking Jags have practically no chance, they've got a puncher's chance, they've got a better-than-average chance based on the injuries Indy has suffered? How do you look at this in general?
Well, I was thinking about that. You know, 14-point underdog, you know, when it's been that big the last couple of years, they've generally competed.
Right.
So that would probably throw them in a puncher's chance. So if they can get, the goal for them, first of all, it should be to get the halftime down, not 50. You know, because they've been blown out in the first half of these first three games against the Colts. I mean, you know, if they can get it to the half, but a puncher's chance, I guess, of keeping it close.
All right.
But this would be a shocker.
What was the line last night, by the way, on Oakland, Kansas City? Probably not that big because
no, I don't think so.
Oakland was at home, and, you know, the different circumstances going into that a little bit. But
I guess it was probably 7 or 8.
Yeah, it seems about reasonable. You got the number from last night?
They took it off. Yeah, give me a second.
Anyway, number one pick's back in play.
Yeah. That's the big thing.
Coming up next.
Let's face it, I don't interrupt you, but from a Jaguars fans perspective, at this point, you might as well say, hey, get it.
Well, I mean, look, I'd like to see them have it. I'd like to see them have as good a pick as they could possibly have. But at the same time, I don't feel like last year I was all in on whatever it took. If it took 0-16, you needed to get in position, I felt, to have your choice of quarterback if you wanted to go that direction. They ended up getting their choice of quarterback anyway. So it didn't matter. I feel differently about it this time around. I think this team, the young players on this team would benefit more. The overall organization would benefit more if they could win 3 out of 6 games. I don't know if they'll win 3 out of 6. You know what I mean? But I'd rather take the 3 wins, finish with the 5th pick, then just lose out the rest of the way, go 1-15, and assure yourself of the top pick in the draft where there may not be a consensus top pick. Now, if I knew that getting that top pick would mean, you know, RG3-type windfall, which I doubt is coming. RG3 is proving that it's probably not a good idea to put that many eggs in one basket.
Correct.
Right now. All right, 641-1010, if you want to get on board today, you will hear some thoughts from Gus Bradley last night from the Gus Bradley Show here on 1010XL. Friday's brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. You also hear my conversation with Johnny Unitas Jr. He's got a book out about his dad that challenges some of the, commonly held conceptions about who his father was as a person as well as a player. And we'll talk about that and his thoughts on the best quarterbacks in the game today as well. Take your calls and take your tweets as well at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Lauren. Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday, just getting started. Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Name that tune. 57 notes. What you got? No, nothing from either one of you. That's what I got.
Silent. I know this song, it's just not coming to me.
Oh, Ryan decided to put his headset on. Now he can actually hear the song. That's good.
That's always helpful when trying to guess a music theme.
You would think.
Yeah, I got nothing.
The All-American Rejects, Move Along. Any clue?
Moving on from the bye.
Good guess, but no.
Can't we all get along?
We all get along.
Do we? I don't know.
Unless there's some fights in there in the break.
Indianapolis is in America. And that's where they're headed this weekend.
Really good guess, no.
That's
you're
a
gonna
fact.
You're going to reject that's
a terrible guess. I'm rejecting all guesses.
Move along.
All right. Nothing for you. Bishop Kenny Clay tonight for you, Lauren Brooks?
That is correct. I have no idea how long it's going to take to get to Clay during rush hour traffic, so I'm planning on leaving around noon.
There's no traffic in this city. Trust me. Oh
my God. Well, really? There's traffic. I've been almost late to West Side.
Up 95.
There's no traffic in the city.
Well, in comparison with Washington, D.C., you're right. It's nothing like that.
So what time do you have to leave? What time you got to leave Hogan Road to get up to Clay?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
You just said noon, right after the show.
Yeah, I'm just going to take off.
Go straight there.
Tailgate.
Just to beat traffic, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was the score last year?
74-73.
Yeah.
And you don't want that this year, Lauren?
That's a lot of up and down, and that's going to wear out this Bishop Kenny offense because they play
gonna,
a lot of them play both
wear
ways.
Wear out the offense?
Ooh, yeah,
there
they play both ways.
For BK,
come on.
That's what I'm saying. I'm there for BK. I want them to win.
Yeah, as long as they win, who cares? Oh, no, you want excitement, man.
No, I'm okay with it. All right, here's the bottom line. We lost that one last year, so if it's going to be the same kind of score, obviously I want it to be Kenny 74.
Yeah, but I mean, as long as they win, I'd rather have. That every time be fantastic. Kidding me?
I kind of like defense.
Watch a high school football game.
I played defense growing up. I like defense. All right.
I got no problem with it.
You're that person. All right.
Yep.
Whatever.
Yep.
7-3. Here Pressure, we go.
They need to contain
keep
the
that
quarterback.
Clock running. Running clock in the second half if we can get it too.
I do like the running clock in high school.
Whatever gets
football.
Us to the bus quickest. Get this thing over with.
No, that means we're up.
The Jags got this news from the league. Over the last few days, I suppose, based on the first half of the season. After each NFL game, the NFL conducts a voice of the fan survey with ticket holders and asks them about the game day experience. And the Jags actually ranked number one in the league in regard to in-game enhancements and game entertainment. So at least they got that going for them, right? I mean, they certainly put a lot of money and effort into improving that and taking that away as a reason to stay away. The number one reason to come is always winning football. They don't have that on the field yet, but in terms of what they've been able to do in addition to the actual play on the field, they seem like they've hit a home run.
Yeah, you think. Now, I mean, that's the stuff that gets people to come here once. Now it's, okay, if they come and see a win or see a competitive game, does that get them back for two and three times? So that's the big hurdle.
Right. And those are the fans that are coming to the game that they're talking to about what was their experience like watching the game in this stadium. And I think there is an argument to be made that this could potentially be the best in-stadium experience in the whole National Football League with all of the upgrades that they put into this stadium. Again, the team has to catch up at some point for that kind of trend to continue. But I think for the fans that are coming on Sundays that have been coming in recent years, they realize just how much better it is right now to come out and watch a Jaguars game with the Wi-Fi and the boards and the cabanas and everything that is going on. It's a really cool experience to be down here to watch a game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm a little bit surprised knowing how cynical I am that if my team were getting beat every week and you're asking me to take this poll.
Listen, this sucks. It would
color my opinion of it. It would not completely, you know, make me necessarily trash the entire game day experience, but the fact that they rank number one despite the fact that they're not delivering victories, at least no more than one here at Everbank this year, I thought was pretty interesting and impressive for what the folks have been able to do to enhance that experience on game day. Let's hear a few thoughts from Gus Bradley last night. Gus Bradley show here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Gus starting out with his quarterback, Blake Bortles, and what he expects to see out of him following the bye week.
Your world calms down for 4 or 5 days, and I think it gives you a chance to kind of reflect and come back. And I know when I saw him when he came back, he said, you know what, I'm going to do some things differently as far as my preparation. You know, how I study film, and I watched it, and, you know, I'm going to try some different things here now that I've gone through it. That's so big to really develop that routine.
We don't have much of a certainly we have no track record on Blake Bortles playing in the NFL. We don't have much of a track record with this franchise. Although last year, you know, anecdotally, the one bye week they had, they came out like gangbusters for the next 5 weeks for the most part. But you know, when you hear things like that, with sometimes we hear guys who are hurt. They miss a couple games. They watch it from the sideline. They say, hey, it's good to just get a little more perspective. Do you think you can get that perspective even if you're not playing, if you're not practicing? Is just that time away to kind of clear your mind enough to maybe give you some perspective?
Probably for him it was. You know, we'll see. But I found it interesting, one of their talking points, and Gus hit it on it there, is the routine that Blake has during the week. Jed talked about it a lot on Wednesday. I'm trying to figure out what that – They've been telling him how to do things a certain way. Has he developed his own little way of doing things that they've sort of meeting in the middle? So it's, you know, there's some gray area there that, okay, was he watching too much stuff? Was he watching the wrong stuff? You know, that kind of thing.
Is he not watching enough?
Yeah. He's early. He's here pretty early, but, you know, it was a paralysis by analysis.
Right.
So, I think, you know, in one thing Jed Fish said on Wednesday, you know, he looks forward to Blake Bortles this offseason talking to Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, et cetera, et cetera. What's their routine? What can he pick up from those guys in terms of, you know, honing in on what he's going to do week to week?
No, we talk about it from a rookie perspective. I mean, for a guy like Blake Bortles who comes in basically week three of this season, I mean, when has he had a chance to just stop? Since his football year started at Central Florida last year, when have any of these rookies had a chance to just stop and really decompress and try to absorb everything that's been going on? I mean, that rookie year, it's more than that. It's that entire experience of going into the draft and trying to get ready for that process and the combine and going through all of those different things. And then your first NFL offseason, now you're being thrown into the mix on an NFL field trying to compete. I mean, there's a lot going on. And until you get past that first year, you don't have a chance to really just relax a little bit. And I think you see that on the field. There are consequences to that with rookies in the National Football League. Gus Bradley also asked last night on his show about Aaron Colvin and his return, his premiere with this Jacksonville Jaguars team.
His mentality, his mindset, every day, can you imagine? Blew out his knee and he comes in with the rookie class. He sees them practicing and playing and contributing to a team, and he has to sit there and pull a sled in the back of the end zone. You know,
yeah.
And he's going through that, and his attitude and work ethic every day, his spirit was tremendous. So that takes a certain maturity right there.
Gus Bradley, of course, with Jeff Logman on the Gus Bradley Show last night. We touched on Colvin a little bit earlier. Have you gotten a chance to talk to him much? You get a sense of what he's like?
Well, I talked to him for a long time before camp started, and even then he was like, hey, you know, I'm looking at 6 weeks, then I'm playing.
Right.
Yeah, the team was more like, okay, you're going to sit eight, and then we'll see. So he always had in his mind that he was going to be playing at some point this season. But pretty confident guy. I mean, I haven't talked to him this week because, you know, doing some other stuff. But I look forward to talking to him after this game. What was the speed of the game like? You know, it's been nearly a year since you played in the Sugar Bowl. So, I mean, I think it's one of the interesting subplots for the last six games.
Yeah, definitely to make his debut as well against, you know, a team that is going to test him and all those defensive backs quite a bit, you would expect, especially with Ahmad Bradshaw now out for the year. I would think maybe a little more reliance on the pass for the Indianapolis Colts. Tony, bring up number three, if you would, right there.
Sure. Gus Bradley last night, speaking of the pass with the Indianapolis Colts, talked about the quarterback for the Colts, and Andrew Luck. He torched him the first time they played him. One of the best players in the league, especially among the young class. Gus Bradley talked about him.
He makes him go. I mean, the number one offense in the league, you know, so obviously they have some very talented players, but he really is their leader. He does a great job, controls the offense, gets them in and out of plays, has a good feel for reading coverages, extends plays.
He's a stud.
Yeah, he is. He's everything you would want if you're trying to build, you know, kind of the perfect quarterback. I mean, really, he's got everything physically that you need. He's not the strongest arm. He's got a plenty strong arm. He's good enough in every category, or better than good enough in every category that you would like. And he is tough to bring down. He's all these things. And I do think, with Bradshaw out, that was kind of a safety valve a little bit for him. I don't think necessarily that those carries are just going to be split up and those passes. I think they'll look to other targets. I think you're going to see Andrew Luck throw more over the last 6 weeks of the season than he's been doing all year.
Yeah, and, you know, if I'm the Colts going into this game, I just go pitch and catch. I say, you try to mix it up a little bit, but This is a Jaguar secondary that was reeling against Dallas a little bit. You know, you're working at a rookie. You know, when Sherrard Martin's in there, he's a safety playing slot corner. That's a transition. So, I mean, Luck has gone for 300 in a row, 8 straight games, and he's just off pace by about 40 yards of Peyton Manning's single season record. So, I mean, it's the record's there if he wants it. I think he goes over 300 easily on Sunday.
Yeah, it would appear to be that way. Dwayne Gronk would be one of the guys trying to stop him or at least slow him down. This weekend, Gus Bradley made a couple of comments about the Gratz situation in Miami this week.
Dwayne Gratz is a really good person. He just made a bad decision, and he knows it. He's going through a tough time with it now, but he's got the support of his teammates, and there's some penalties with it, and he understands that. But then we learn, we grow, and we move forward.
Yeah, I think this is honestly, I'm not trying to downplay because it's the Jags or anything like that. It's just... it's about as silly as a run-in with the police as you can have, unless there's something more nefarious that we don't know about, and it doesn't seem to be the case. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, once this week's gone by, whatever he gets from his teammates as a reminder in that locker or things from time to time is the only repercussion beyond this week that we're going to see for Dwayne Gratz with his football team.
No, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. Finally, Gus Bradley last night talking about coming up with solutions. I'm curious to see what problems he's solving with this answer.
I'm not a guy that makes excuses, nor is our team and our coaching staff. We have to find out the truth. And so we put together and we look at this information and we say, why is this taking place? Well, it feels like you're making a lot of excuses. Well, because of this and this happened and we had turnovers and we made this decision. Those are things that are all good as long as you use that information to come up with solutions.
Here's the excuse. The other team has more better players.
Okay. But
that's why they're losing.
That's fine. But at the same time, when you compound that by making mistakes, yeah.
They can't tackle. I mean, I got for Sunday's paper, I went through every snap. They got 95 missed tackles in 10 games. That's pathetic. So can't tackle. They have no margin for error. They compound that by fumbling a punt, missing tackles, penalties. Yeah, it all that makes it a 17-7 game becomes a 31-7 game.
Well, let me ask you this then. If they're from the sounds of it, and I'm not arguing your point, I'm just trying to get you to expand on it a little bit. If the talent level is so stark between the two, is Dave Caldwell not doing enough in his first 2 years, or is it just from where he had to begin with and the nature of trying to get as many young players as ready as possible that's just a fact of life they're going to have to deal with?
Well, I would probably lean toward that one. I mean, at some point, the statute limitations on Gene Smith is going to be up. I don't think it's that. I don't think we're there yet.
It's not this season, yeah. Right? But
like Dave's laying in the weeds a little bit in terms of adding some of those high dollar players, which is always their plan. Is that pre third year off season? But you look at the free agent class they trotted out last March. Dakota Watson cut. Toby Gerhardt injured. You know,
not
backup,
very effective.
Not
yeah.
very effective. Chris Clemens, you know, whatever. Red Bryan has been okay, but
he's been solid.
He's a run stopper.
Right, and, but that's you knew that when you got him. I mean, he's done his job. And Beatles has been less than overwhelming.
Yeah, and, you know, Ziggy Hood's a rotational defensive tackle. So, you know, I think they obviously thought they would have gotten more from that five-person signing period. But, and then, you know, so... it's a cop for me, and I've been, you know, people have tried to talk me out of this throughout this week. A guy like Jonathan Cyprian has to play better.
I don't think anybody disputes that.
Well,
though.
People in this building have sort of said, "Well, you're being too hard on him." So, I said I disagree. Tell me one play he's made this year. So,
and what was the response?
Well, you know, he's making impacts in this plays and blah blah blah. And you know, if such and such gave up big plays, does that mean they're not any good? You know, I just basically have told these people, we agree to disagree, come talk to me when he has a turnover. So that's how I judge a safety, is he making impact plays? So he needs to be better over the last six games. This team needs him to work out because he was the 33rd overall pick. You look at the rest of the roster, linebackers are going to look totally different next year. We all know that. And then, you know, the offensive line, can they settle a little bit? And get, you know, and not so many negative rush plays. So I think the last six games is a referendum on a lot of guys. Not so much will they be here in 2015, will they be starters in 2015?
Yeah, a mix of both of those things. All right, 641-1010 if you want to get on board. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today. It's Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida with the largest selection of new or pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville with absolutely no dealer fees. Claude Nolan Cadillac guaranteed to offer you the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac one step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to claudenolan.com or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. Coming up, you'll hear my conversation with Johnny Unitas Jr. He's got a book out called Johnny, You, and Me about what it's been like in his life or what it was like growing up as the son of one of the most famous athletes in America and I guess the world as well, and Unitas' place in history, plus the current crop of NFL quarterbacks and more. It's all coming up on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, joining us now on the Garber Auto Mall hotline, we've got the son of a legend, Johnny Unitas Jr., joining us here. John Unitas Jr., writing a book about his dad, one of the greatest quarterbacks, maybe the greatest quarterback of all time. It's called Johnny, You, and Me, the man behind the golden arm. John, how are you this morning? Thanks for joining us.
I'm very fine. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
What was the impetus to write this book?
It's been a labor of love. It's taken me 3.5 years to put it together. Both of my parents died within 4 months of each other. My mom in May of 2002, that was Dorothy, and of course my father September 11th, 2002. And, you know, losing both of your parents, like a lot of people have back to back, I just wanted to tell the story about growing up being John Unitas Jr., the good, the bad, the ugly, and more importantly, but just really wanted to humanize my mom and my father and demystify my dad. Everybody puts him on a pedestal, certainly where he belongs. I agree with you. I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time and also the greatest father of all time, too. And my mom was the greatest mother of all time. But again, I thought, you know, it'd be kind of interesting for people who have talked about my father, followed his career, followed his life, but didn't know really about his personal side and what he was like outside of the game of football. And I touch on that throughout the book extensively. There's some good, there's bad. Again, he wasn't a man that had a halo over his head. I don't know many men who do, but I just thought it would be an interesting story for other side of my father for people to see.
What was it like personally for you? You've got, you know, anytime you have a successful father, every son has to live up to their reputation, but you carry his name, and it's such a famous name as well. What was it like growing up as Johnny Unitas Jr.?
Oh, it was a fun time. I really didn't think much of it other than, you know, other folks' comments when I would introduce myself or be with my father. And humbled me. It made me grow up a lot faster in as far as being mature and being able to handle that pressure. I did play football myself and was a quarterback, but ended up switching to defensive back. Rather hit somebody than be hit, frankly. But it was fun. I loved it. I even named my son John III, which my father really wasn't happy about me doing, and that's in the book, which everyone could read. But needless to say, it's a very humbling experience. And I think, as I touch in the book as well, you know, being a son of a celebrity, whether it's your mom or your dad, it's something that you've got to be careful with. Certainly in today's world with social media and things of that nature, which we didn't have back in the 60s and the 70s when living the life back there was carefree. You could ride your bike to the 7-Eleven,
sure,
or skateboard, and your parents would know you were missing, and you'd come home. So, not like today. I just think there's some side of that you know, it builds great character, it builds integrity, and it's hopefully your parents have done a good enough job for you that it won't interfere with your life moving forward.
I'm talking here with John Unitas Jr. The book is Johnny, You, and Me, the man behind the golden arm. Tell us something, John, if you would, that you believe is commonly believed about your dad, but that may be a misconception. What is something that people misunderstand or not realize about your father?
My father was very much of an introvert. He wasn't an extrovert. He didn't like crowds. He loved the fans. He loved the people. He recognized, as his fellow teammates back then in that era, that if it wasn't for the team, the fans, they wouldn't be so successful and prominent in their lives. A lot of these guys, in my father's year, they stayed in the town where they played. They gave back into the community and kind of molded themselves in the community. I don't think that happens as much today. It may in some towns, some cities, but I don't think it happens as much.
You know, you look at the way the game of football has changed in terms of the passing game. You can't compare numbers anymore at the top of the charts because you look now and, you know, the passing game has exploded. The statistics have exploded along with it. And I think one of the strongest arguments for your father as being the greatest, or certainly among the greatest, is how far he outpaced his contemporaries. I mean, he put up some modern day passing totals, you know, in an era where it was very infrequently seen like that. And I gotta believe you think that's one of the strongest arguments in his favor is what he did compared to his peers.
Well, you're right. You can't compare my father's era, that time, with today's player. You know, my father's, I guess, his last record broken was the 47 consecutive touchdown passes by Drew Brees. Only took him some 50-some years to do that. But the thing is, you just can't compare those records. They're just it's just a different time. I mean, back then you had 8 and 12 games a year. You know, the receivers weren't protected. You could bump the receivers 30 yards down the field, you know, and not be penalized. Today it's, you know, 5 yards and you touch him and boom, flag comes up. So, my father was very much a student of the game. He loved the game. I mean, many, many days, growing up, you know, my father would be down in the basement, with his projector sitting behind his desk, his playbook, his scrap pad next to him. And the projector only had a forwarder and a reverse. And my sister Janice and I would be down in the basement messing around and we'd hop on his lap and he'd, you know, let us mess with the projector and we go forward, reverse. In about 3 minutes, we'd get so bored, we're out of here, you know, we're going to finish. So we would move on. But, yeah, he was very much a student of the game. And, you know, you have a few of those guys out there today, you know, Peyton, maybe Eli, Matt Ryan, guys like that, who, by the way, all won the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award, since its inception, since 1987. These guys are, real humble. They all aspire to the same attributes my father had in growing up and playing the game, and we're very proud of them, and I think we have 7 Golden Arm winners still playing in the NFL today, so we're very proud of it, and I'm very proud and honored, really, to continue my father's legacy through the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Educational Foundation, and I know my children will carry it on as well.
It's a name that carries a lot of clout to this day and will forevermore, I'm sure, in football circles. John Unitas Jr. here, our guest on 1010XL 92.5 FM. John, growing up, when you talk about your dad, you know, watching film as all the great quarterbacks do, you know, there's a lot of time on the road. I'm sure, you know, he's a very popular man. There are a lot of demands on his time. Did it put strain on the family life? How difficult was it being, you know, the son or the wife in your mom's case or whatever, what have you, of such a famous icon?
Well, I think we all dealt with it fine. I mean, it's not a burden, really. It's just how people react to you, you know. I mean, there are many times when I remember sitting in Memorial Stadium with my mom, and we all were in the nosebleed section way up top. And if the Colts lost or Dad didn't have a real good game or whatever, you know, they knew who we were. They'd turn around and say, you know, your father's a bum, you know, and I'm just a little, you know, impressive type of guy. And I'm like, you know, Mom, what's he talking about, you know. And my mother would turn to me and said, Son, you know, it's not just about your father. There are 11 guys on the offense and 11 guys on the defense. It's a team. So don't hold your head down. Get your head up and be real proud of your father. So, and my mom was really, she was the cement and the mortar, if you will, to hold it all together. And she was just she's a wonderful mom, and both of my parents are sorely missed. But, you know, growing up with the name, I'm still very, very, very proud of it. You know, it has its moments. It sometimes gets my foot in the door, and sometimes it doesn't. But that's okay. It's all up to me. Anyone you want your foot in that door to do your job and do it right, and with a lot of respect and integrity that you're brought up with.
Absolutely. All right, John. As you look at the contemporary crop of quarterbacks, or even maybe anybody outside of your dad, you put your dad at the top of the list. Very understandable. He's got a great argument to be the greatest quarterback of all time. Who would you say occupy the next 2 or 3 spots on your personal list of the greatest quarterbacks of all time?
A lot of good guys out there. You know, I hate to single anybody out. They're all playing hard and doing the best they can. certainly what comes to mind right now would be Peyton Manning. You know, I just watch him. He's just so uncanny. He looks so much like my dad back there, and you know, moving back. He's not much of a runner like my dad was. And you know, my father started running. An offensive lineman or defensive lineman could catch him in about 2 yards. But again, you know, it's you know, you look at Peyton, you look at you know, Drew Brees, you certainly look at Aaron Rodgers, you know, guys like that, you know, Tom Brady, you know, they're all students of the game. You can tell. I mean, they're out there. My father loved practice, so you know, it was one of those things where, you know, if it was football, man, it didn't matter. So he loved it.
All right, John Unitas Jr. Again, the book is entitled "Johnny, You and Me: The Man Behind the Golden Arm." I'm assuming it's out now, so I'm assuming Amazon, all your better bookstores. Where else can you pick up a copy of this?
Yeah, it's an Amazon.com, certainly Barnes and Nobles, Costco's are carrying it, I understand, and you can also go to my website, JohnnyUnitas.com, and under collectibles, there's a link there to directly to Triumph Books. Tremendous publisher, great teamwork with them. It's a I'm very, very, very proud to be part of their group as well. They've done a nice job and really happy about the book, and I hope everyone enjoys it. I think they will. It's a good read. I start each chapter off with a little bit of tidbit about football and what it might have meant to my father at that time, and then I roll into my father's life. We start with the funeral, and we end with some other stuff in the book, which hopefully y'all read, so... Thank you very much.
Hey, John, we appreciate it. As we let you go, just give us, if you could, what is your favorite, most fond memory of your dad from his playing days? Is there a particular moment or game that stands out to you the most?
Not so much the games. You know, what's really that really is the fondest for me was being able to be with my father. I was a ball boy growing up. I was at training camp with him. I was on the top bunk. He was on the bottom bunk. The dorm next door was the room next door was Jimmy Orr and Raymond Berry. And you know, just being able to be with him, later in his life, I managed him, card shows and appearances and things of that nature, and we're able to, as adults, you know, talk differently, share our lives a little bit more, it was just a wonderful time. He was my best friend, and you know, it was just a wonderful time. But there are a lot of games, there's a lot of times, but I think the best for me was just being with my father and the opportunity to sit on a plane, gab a little bit, and move forward.
Well, great stuff, John, and we appreciate you taking a few minutes out with us to talk about his career and life and the book, Johnny, You and Me, The Man Behind the Golden Arm. As we said, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Costco, and a number of other outlets. John, best of luck, continued success in the future with the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Educational Foundation, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time, and God bless everybody. Thank you.
Would have been an upset if he had said anybody but his dad is the greatest of all time, right? I mean, yeah. Look, it's not like he doesn't have a pretty good argument for it. Who would you put, if I asked you, O'Halloran, your personal number one quarterback of all time? Who do you rank at the top?
I'd put Montana first. Then I'd put, Marino second and Favre third.
Favre, really? Interesting. Yeah. Favre third. I would put Elway at the top. Mm-hmm. I just think, to me, I think he could have played in any offense, you know, had the physical tools to do anything he wanted to on the football field, obviously won at the highest level, put up the big numbers, all that stuff. What about you, Tony?
I'd probably have Elway at the top of my list, but guys like Montana, Marino.
Yeah, I mean, there's no right answer.
It's trying to figure out
mine.
Who would fill out that list. Yeah, it's difficult.
Warren Brooks, who's the greatest quarterback of all time?
Can I suck up and say Johnny Unitas?
You can if you want to. His son's no longer on the line, so I don't know if it's going to have much impact, but why not?
But like you talked about in the interview, the passing numbers that he put up in an age where most teams ran the ball, he is certainly high up there. I think Peyton Manning will go down
to the interview. I'm very proud of you. I'm very appreciative.
Oh, it was a phenomenal interview. Well done, Mike. It was all thanks to you.
Spectacular. All right. It's called Nolan Cadillac Friday. We appreciate it. Appreciate Johnny Unitas Jr. I did not mean to say appreciate. Okay, that was like, I stopped.
Buddy.
I didn't try
we
to go.
We appreciate you, my friend.
Preach, brother. No, that was not my intention for joining us on the Garber Auto Mall hotline for that.
And now, this date in football history.
Ah, yes, we are red hot with this date in football history right now. It wouldn't top the list of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but a pretty good one born on this date in 1966. This date in football history, by the way. Brought to you by the best fence company in Jacksonville. Troy Aikman was born on this date in 1966. And 5 years later, Michael Strahan was born with a big gap between his front teeth. And he has capitalized on that quite well.
Yes, he has.
What in the world, man? Michael Strahan. I mean, I guess he's very good at what he does.
He is.
On TV. He's very gregarious and all that, but...
He was always an entertaining player. It was always fun to listen to him talk, and as soon as it ended... I don't think anyone could have expected him to wind up where he's been. I mean, the NFL on Fox...
And so good at it.
Right. Made a lot of sense for a guy like that. A former player, he was well-spoken. He had a lot of fun. That was kind of a goofy show to begin with, but the idea that he's... The new Regis. I mean, it's crazy, but that is where he's at, and he's really, really fantastic.
You could have seen like a scenario where he did it for a year or two, and it was like, well, that didn't work. But no, it's apparently worked incredibly successfully. Also on this date, November 21st, 1965, an overflow crowd, as it is described, of over 76,000 jammed the Cotton Bowl, which gave the Dallas Cowboys, were they the Texans at the time? But they were, what do you think? When did they switch from the Texans to the Cowboys? Anyway, gave them their first home sellout in team history, and all those rabid Cowboy fans in the Cotton Bowl got to see the Browns come in and kick that butt 24-17.
Nice.
Over the Dallas Cowboys. I know that's nice. Who likes the Cowboys? Unless you're a Cowboy fan. They're one of those teams.
Oh, yeah. Easy to hate.
Easy to hate. There are a bunch of them out there. Hell, they're all easy to hate for me, you know. It's,
all you got to know is somebody that likes them.
That's my nature. That's the way it goes. Best Fence Company brings you this date in football history. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality fencing product for you at a competitive price while providing you unsurpassed customer service. Get a professional free estimate at your convenience. Call 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Week 11 of the NFL schedule got underway last night with the Oakland Raiders getting their first win of the, week 12 of the season. They got the first one of the season, 24-20 over the Kansas City Chiefs. Oakland led the game at one point late in the third quarter, 17-3, only to see the Chiefs rip off 17 consecutive points to take a 20-17 lead midway through the fourth. When the Raiders went on a 17-play, 80-yard drive that consumed over 7 minutes of the game clock and ended with a touchdown pass from Derek Carr to James Jones, the Raiders were the final winless team in the league. They improved to 1-10 with the win. Kansas City slips to 7-4. Adrian Peterson may finally be showing the remorse that the NFL and Roger Goodell wanted him to show through this entire process. Who knows what Peterson has been thinking behind the scenes? What we do know is that part of what the league cited as a reason for his 6-game suspension was that he wasn't showing the, quote, proper remorse, whatever that means. Peterson has come out in an interview with USA Today Sports saying, quote, "I won't ever use a switch again. There's different situations where a child needs to be disciplined as far as timeout, taking their toys away, making them take a nap. There's so many different ways to discipline your kids." The Bills-Jets game has been moved to Detroit on Monday night at 7 p.m. It was supposed to be in Buffalo, but that's not going to happen. The Bills are going to try and practice tonight in Detroit, assuming they can get out of Buffalo this afternoon.
And the airport's not an issue, apparently. Getting to the airport may be. It's all about that lake effect snow, Howard. Did you have the lake effect snow in D.C., or you just have the snow?
We had snow, but then growing up, North Dakota, we just had snow.
Just more snow.
Snow, cold snow.
I mean, maybe it's been around forever. Has this phenomena, which is lake effect snow, which I'm sure the actual phenomena has existed forever, as long as there have been lakes, but has that term been in use for more than, say, the last 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's been around, but usually, like, before this week, I termed the lake effect snow is you get, like, a boom, 6 inches. Comes out of nowhere. It's like the pictures you saw, a wall.
Right.
Not 60 feet. I mean, this is a once-in-a-generation thing this week.
This is a big effect that they've got going on up there. Adrian Peterson's situation is, you know, I can see, I don't think the NFLPA has a prayer getting him on the field this year. I really don't. You know, with everything that's gone down. But do you think there are some points, some valid points that they're making about Goodell kind of making it up as he goes along, overstepping the authority, which they've given him in the collective bargaining agreement, right? But do you think they have made some good points about the length in which he's used that power?
The NFLPA never makes a good point. So
okay.
Because you hit the nail on the head. They collectively bargained for this agreement. They could have continued the lockout, but their constituents were on the verge of not getting paychecks, so they caved, as they always do. And, you know, that you agreed to make the commissioner, judge, jury, and executioner.
Right, right.
Say that. I tried to say it quickly, but so, you know, if you're the commissioner, do you turn that down?
No, but I agree with you in that, but I guess one of the complaints that may have some validity to it is that it seems like he's flying by the seat of his pants and there's no consistency to some of the punishments. Ultimately, Adrian Peterson has pled guilty or no contest to a misdemeanor charge, and he's getting, you know, a bigger suspension now than Ray Rice got initially. And I guess, you know, their feeling is it's all because of public relations and all that stuff. And I know the NFL has tried to toughen up their standards. I'm not saying they're doing the wrong thing, but is there any case to be made about the unequal application of the hammer that Roger Goodell wields?
Well, they can bitch and moan all about does the punishment fit the crime. They can argue whether there should be a third party, which there probably should be, but until there is, he still has that power. If I'm the PA, I tread very carefully here because all anybody who's going to see around is this involves beating up a kid.
Right.
If this was a DUI or whatever, you know, people might say, well, everybody makes mistakes. Beat the crap out of a
yes,
kid.
Yes, you did.
So anybody who, and that's what disappointed me earlier this week, and people are saying, oh, Adrian Peterson has been railroaded. Anybody who makes him to be the victim in this case is terrible, pathetic, and sickening. And he deserves, and I say this as I grew up a diehard Minnesota Viking fan. I hope they win a Super Bowl one day. I don't want to see him on the field for the team I rooted for this year.
Based on his comments yesterday, I don't know if he will be again. Do you see? I mean, he almost was. He said, look, you know, if it's out there, and I'm paraphrasing here, and it's not a word-for-word quote, but he said, if it's out there that Minnesota might want to move on from me, well, I guess so be it. They're going to have to do what they want to do. Something to that effect. Well, that's never been out there. That's never even been suggested by the Vikings.
Because they haven't suggested anything.
No.
So,
but and most of the reporting from anonymous team sources that you hear are that the players and coaching staff would take him back if they're reinstated. Now, that's players and coaching staff. They don't make the macro level decisions. And I can understand if the Vikings are concerned about, you know, sponsors and, you know, all the public perception of bringing this guy back in. Do you think he plays for the Vikings again?
I say he does. But I think, you know, once he sits out the full year, you know, then you start repairing those bridges during the off season. It's very tough to do that in season, you know, because there's the game that week. You know, you're in the public eye more. So, I mean, it felt like his comments were interesting yesterday because I didn't read a big sense of remorse. I think he only was sorry that he got caught, and him saying that about the Vikings, it's sort of like, you know, why didn't you guys support me more?
Right. When I'm the one who screwed up.
Yeah. Well, we're still paying you.
Right.
And you know, we're not, you know,
which in a sense they got screwed in a way. Yeah. The commissioner's office took the onus off the Vikings to have to punish him by putting him on the exempt list, but they still had to pay him and couldn't use his services. You know, so I don't know what they would have opted for. Obviously early on they opted to bring him back right away until the public hue and cry got to be too much, and then they said, "Whoa, we got to change our tactics."
I mean, what the commissioner's list allowed them to do is not have to make a decision on whether to cut him in the middle of the season.
Right.
So, you know, they had to pay him, but it's you know, it's interesting the fact that, I mean, you're right, he's not going to play this year. Then okay, what kind of, if does he have trade value? Do the Vikings want him back? I mean, I can see why the coaches and players want him back.
I think it would be tough to trade for that contract. You know, yes. I mean, he's got, was it 12 or 13 million, somewhere between 12 and 13 million he's due next year alone on that. That is a big chunk. That's a tenth of the salary cap roughly for a single running back who is, if he's not there yet, he's rapidly approaching the age of 30.
So basically that eliminates the 16 to 20 teams that are playing quarterback money to quarterbacks.
Right.
To take up their, but yeah, his average salary is 14.38. So let's see what he's making. You know, his 2015 cap number is like 12.8.
Right.
So it's a tough one to do.
That's a big chunk right there. I think, and you know, the suggestion, is out there that Jerry Jones covets him, and.
Well, he would be the guy that has as little space as possible for him. Especially
understood.
When you got Romo and you got Dez.
But we all know, look, you can manipulate the salary cap if you try, if you're motivated to do it, right?
And if Peterson's motivated to, felicitate his next stop.
Or facilitate, for that matter.
So let's just review this segment here. I've screwed up judge, jury, and executioner.
You were headed in the right direction,
I've almost swore.
Yes, and felicitate is a new one on the pro. It's all,
I mean,
good, brother.
If Peterson, the Vikings, agree to a divorce, and he tells Jerry Jones, okay, if they find a way to trade for you, I'll just redo my deal for whatever it takes.
Right, well, that's the question. I don't know if he's thinking clearly on that aspect of it, because I think he thinks he's going to make his money wherever he goes. But
that may be just one place if they'll take him back, and that's the Minnesota.
It could be. Yeah. Right. I mean, if he plays in Minnesota, he's going to play for that, because I get the sense that he's, based on those comments yesterday, he's not going to go in there and take some kind of hometown discount to renegotiate that deal to stay there. He'd almost like a clean break to get out of there and if for nothing else, get with a franchise that's more competitive in the later stages of his career. All right, 641-1010 if you want to get on board. We'll get a few of your phone calls in coming up next. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Oh, I've been playing the hell out of this in the car, by the way. The very best of Fleetwood Mac, two-album set. As Hacker always says, what's your favorite album? Greatest Hits. Right, it's got all the good songs on it, man. Chain.
Fleetwood Mac. So good in concert, too.
Fleetwood Mac is...
Move the Chains. Is that a key for Sunday?
That's it. I decided to go easy today.
Move the Chains? 10 years after, because 10 yards
is
the first down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Move along. All right, now I get it.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
That's all you got to do.
Move those sticks. Pick up some first downs here. Matriculate that ball down the field. And listen to plenty of Fleetwood Mac. They'd be in my top 10,
good.
I would say, all time.
Because you're such a metalhead.
I am such a metalhead, right. You know, and I get that hard driving. Joe Cowan called me a metalhead earlier this week.
Huh.
He was surprised I liked the Jersey Boys soundtrack because he thought I was a metalhead. What the hell's talking about? I don't know. What's your music genre?
A little bit of everything.
He likes U2 and Coldplay. We know that for sure.
We know that for sure. I like Springsteen, but I also like some country stuff. So.
Yeah, I could listen to it. I would listen to a little bit of everything, yeah. I suppose.
Except Mike banned Springsteen.
I like Fleetwood Mac.
Mac's awesome. What's that?
Banned Springsteen. You banned me from playing Springsteen.
There's no Springsteen on local sports radio here. Shows. Trust me. All right.
I've been disappointed by, though, you know, he has the own station on Sirius XM. I'm a little disappointed
about Springsteen
that.
Does?
Yeah,
they
Channel
have 20. Station.
Yeah, Channel 20. I just got picked up like a month ago, so a little disappointed by it. There's just too much deep track stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you have a whole network, you got the whole day.
Yeah.
You're going to get some deep track stuff, I would expect.
Play it in the middle of the night then. I want the Born in the USA album played in full, starting every day at 10 o'clock.
True to form, Ryan O'Halloran.
Then why have Sirius? Why not just put that CD on for yourself?
Boom.
Oh!
Okay, never mind.
she said, why don't you just have Born in the USA in your car and just play
new,
it?
Well, the new car, I recently got a new car last month.
Okay.
No CD player.
Oh. What do you have for music in there?
Well, it's just the radio.
Just the radio. You don't have anywhere to plug an iPod in or anything like
that? There's, I see a couple.
People still iPod, or is that like five generations of technology?
I have an iPod.
I know. Could still listen to cassettes. I'm just, I mean. It's,
no, because most cars come with like a USB,
so you can just
connect
pop that
your
bad
iPod
boy in
or
there.
Whatever to your car and listen to
I it. See some things in the car, but I haven't really.
Does your car have Bluetooth? Yet.
Put your headset on, man. What's wrong with you?
No wonder he can't hear you.
I'm talking to someone who's not listening to me.
Yeah, it has Bluetooth.
Okay, so
that's when you can talk.
Well worth it.
That's when you can talk when the phone's not in your hands.
Yes. Well, it's also when you can play music from your phone in your car without having to plug it into anything.
So you can use your phone as your iPod.
You just had an exasperated sigh. But
yeah, you should see the look in his face.
Some calls.
It's very complicated.
Thank you for your advice.
Right. Now, Ryan's always a fan of going to the phone line. 641-1010. Let's get Mac up here on Jaguars today. Good morning, Mac. How are you?
Hey, fellas. I got one quarterback, but can I name the bottom real quick?
Can you name the what? The bottom?
No. My favorite quarterback. My personal favorite quarterback. My number one is Dan Marino, without a doubt. I shut the conversation down. Dan Marino was my favorite, number one quarterback of all time. But
okay.
Four more behind.
I think Max fading on us right there.
He's gone.
Yeah, he's done. that phone was fading on us, Mac. Well, look, if you're talking about your favorites, I can't dispute who the number one on your list is of all time. I know you had Dan Marino on your list, number two of all-time quarterbacks. I will not give Dan Marino those kind of props. A, because I don't like the Dolphins. And
no Super Bowls?
B, because I don't like the Dolphins. And C, because no Super Bowls would be one. Look, I get all the reasons. Quarterback can't affect everything. And that and Dan would give isotoner gloves to his offensive lineman. And he thought that was a fitting gift after throwing for 5,000 yards. So I thought he was a cheap guy on top of that. Just thought I'd throw that in there. Last night we had Oakland losing to Kansas City, or Oakland beating Kansas City, excuse me, for the first win of the season. I don't know how the tiebreakers will work out if the Jags were to lose to Indy. I don't know where things would stand. I haven't checked it out yet, but certainly the number one pick is in play at this point for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
It's, since there's no head-to-head, it's strength of schedule. Oakland has their own division, which is better than the AFC South, and they've played the NFC West. So they would have a tougher schedule.
Which would mean that...
It means they pick first or second?
No, I think that means they pick second. Because if you have the same record against a weaker schedule, that means you performed worse, I would think, right? Yeah. That would make sense.
You would think that the draft is about determining who is the worst team to get that number one overall pick. So if you're going to strength of schedule, it would be the weaker schedule.
Right. Now, look, a lot can happen in this time. I mean, it's 6 weeks to go for the Jacksonville Jaguars, 5 weeks to go for the Oakland Raiders. But do you get the sense, and I'm not trying to get too deep into the draft talk and all that, but do you get the sense there will be a guy this year that will be the coveted commodity, or are there enough question marks? And typically it's a quarterback, we know. Mm-hmm. But are there enough question marks about Mariota and Winston and whomever else you want to put into the conversation that there won't be that one guy that causes some team to catapult to the top?
Well, I think there's right now there's two quarterbacks that, you know, figured to be up there.
Stand out, right?
That combined with the fact that Jaguars won't be in a market for a quarterback, you know, that will probably make it less likely somebody will be desperate to get up there. You know,
because they'll assume they'll move past them anyway.
Yes, and then, okay, well, if Team A trades above us, we can still take the other option. You know, if let's say they have Mariota and Winston tied.
Right.
You know, if a team feels like Mariota's heads and tails, heads and shoulders above Winston, they'll want to get up there.
O'Halloran's greatest hits continues. Do you think Oakland would draft a quarterback, or do you think they like Derek Carr enough?
I think in the first round, I think they would stick with Carr. In the first round, I don't think they would draft a quarterback.
Right, right.
I don't think the Jags would draft a quarterback, so that's one and two.
The Jets certainly will.
Yeah, after that.
I think the Bucs would. You know, Mike Glennon had a shot. I'm not saying he had a fair shot or a long enough shot or anything, but he's had at least a look with Lovie Smith. And he wasn't, it's not like they invested a ton in him anyway. I mean, you look at the Jets drafted Geno Smith high second round last year. And word is he'll never play another down for him, barring injury to Mike Vick the rest of the way, that he'll be out of New York entirely, after this season.
Yeah. So if I'm sitting, in the 8-14 range right now, I'm looking at, okay, I have to get up to minimum number two to get my quarterback.
I would think, yeah.
Yeah. So,
to guarantee if I want one of those top guys. Do you think Winston's going to be one of those guys? I mean, is he going to have, are there going to be repercussions from all the negativity around him and all the things, the situations he's put himself into?
I would say no. I think teams are going to look at the on the field production, look at, you know, okay, do they chalk up some of the off the field stuff to be an idiot, or B, is he a bad guy? If they figure he's just a young idiot, then they'll say, okay, we can get people around him. Hell of a talent.
How many young, I agree, he is a hell of a talent. I don't think he's a flawless NFL prospect from that standpoint. You know, he's got some delivery, concerns. He's certainly thrown a lot more interceptions this year, than he did last year. So maybe, you know, whether he's reading the field properly or not, those are all things that are subject for, debate. But, I don't know, man. I just think that, how many knucklehead quarterbacks have we seen, you know, bad judgment quarterbacks have we seen, and there may be some examples that have been taken that high and had success. You got a guy like Zach Mettenberger, right, who was I don't know what the exact charge was, but basically groping. A sexual groping, right? Yeah. Groping in a bar, right? So when you say sexual assault, people conjure up certain things, but along those lines, certainly that injury, lack of mobility, all contributed to his draft stock. You can take a chance on a guy much later in the draft, like the Titans did with Mettenberger. It's tough. It's tough for me right now to see some team. Now, there are teams that are historically poor decision makers. The Jets, I think, being one of them. Oakland typically being one of them. That maybe it'll be a team like that says, the hell with it, we're going to roll the dice on this guy.
Let's say you're Philadelphia and you're drafting 27th.
Do you come up for Mariota?
You got to give up your whole draft. And if you're the Jags,
that might not be enough.
Exactly. Do you say, you know, if you're the Jags, do you, Philadelphia says, we'll give you all of our draft this year
and a one next year.
And a one and a one.
That I would do.
Because that means that gives you more than enough ammo to move back up into the teens.
Oh, you can do anything you want at that point, and you keep those next. I don't think any team, I don't put it this way, I think it's very unlikely that any team would give up that kind of haul.
Any sane team.
Right. Yeah. And Chip Kelly strikes me as a pretty sane guy who's run a pretty high-powered offense with, you know, a mid-round quarterback and a cast-off so far up to this point. Now, he may feel that Mariota's the perfect guy to take that offense to the next level, or he may know the flaws of Mariota, you know, that he was able to help disguise along the way. Who was it? Who was Nassib's coach? Was it Marone? Right? Of course, they're going to take Nassib, right? Because he knows all about him. Well, right, he knows all about him, you know? And he realized he's better served as a fourth-round pick.
So they take EJ.
Right. I'm not saying it was a good decision.
Wrong, but they didn't want to touch the guy they knew, and they screwed up on the guy they took.
And they might have been right about Nassib, but they were certainly wrong about taking EJ at that point in time. But I think that's what happens when you're desperate for a quarterback and none of them really present themselves to you. And you feel like, you know, you're in that range where, well, if I don't take him now, he may be a value really 15 picks later, but I don't have a pick 15 picks later. So I got to take him now and not risk losing out on him if he's the one guy that I think could develop. I don't have a problem with you taking a chance on a quarterback, but when you miss on him like that, you're going to cost yourself your job ultimately. Dwayne Allen, by the way, remains sidelined at practice today. Wouldn't expect him to be suiting up for the Colts this week. Greg Toler, last I heard, had not practiced either. He was still in the concussion protocol, right?
Yeah, so if not practicing Wednesday and Thursday, usually
very low probability of play.
I mean, if he doesn't go today, I wouldn't expect him to play.
Right, and Allen not going today, so you'd expect Kobe Fleener will be starting. He had a big game for them last week, and speculation is Trent Richardson will handle third down duties. His role will expand. I don't think it'll be as big an expansion. I think it'll be shared in part by Andrew Luck this week. I mean, look, Bradshaw, other than Luck, maybe their best offensive player, at least the way he's played this year. So it's not insignificant. Dwayne Allen.
Oh, it's a big loss.
Dwayne Allen was having an excellent year, and he's their best all-around tight end. He's Mercedes Lewis in terms of what they, you know, Fleener's more just a pass catcher. That's what he is. He's not a big physical presence there, and Toler's one of the starting corners. So, you know, look, Jags are banged up in some cases as well, but that's not chopped liver that Indy's going to do without this week.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Allen and Bradshaw, and from a Colts perspective, is okay. Can they muddle through the Jaguars, and then next week they got the Redskins at home? Yeah, they have enough talent to make up for against those teams, but those are big losses when it comes to crunch time in the playoffs, and you know you need a guy who can turn a screen pass on third and eight into a first down.
No question. All right, coming up next, the fan feedback spotlight from the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you for your keys to victory for the Jacksonville Jaguars against the Indianapolis Colts coming up this Sunday with the Jags' final six games straight ahead. You'll hear them all right here on the home of the Jaguars, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars today down the home stretch here, Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran. What you got going on over there, by the way?
To see if there's any practice updates from the Jaguars outside, but none yet.
What do you got? Nothing?
Nothing yet.
Nothing
but,
going on?
There's not going to be any. We sort of know who's not going to be available this week. So it should be Branch and Jeremiah George. So sounds like
JT Thomas in the middle again.
Yeah, yeah. Talvin Smith could start in base for the first time. And then move Geno Hayes to the strong side, auto spot. So, but they'll play a lot of nickel against this team.
That's interesting. Ultimately, do you see Talvin Smith developing into a three-down guy here?
I think he's going to get a heck of a shot this offseason to be if he can be
the show he can
to
do it.
Do the be on the weak side. You know, these obviously found a home in the nickel stuff, but you know if. Yeah, I think he's going to get a shot at it, at least, you know, compete for it.
Posluszny back next year, right?
Yes.
So Posluszny, Talvin, JT Thomas, you'd maybe prefer to have as a kind of a guy you can slide into a number of spots, a primary backup kind of guy?
Yeah, because one thing Gus brought up this week is they don't have a lot of core four special teamers. Right now they have two.
Right.
Last year at this time they had like six or seven. Because
guys that played on all four units.
Yeah, because JT Thomas, Denard, Demetrius McCray, they've been thrust in the starting roles. That means they take them off special teams. So JT Thomas can be sort of that jack of all trades, that linebacker, and then a special teamer. I mean, the outside linebacker, you know, what's the draft look like at linebacker? You know, and so.
We looked at the free agent list the other day, Tony and I. It wasn't outstanding.
There's nothing there, and then there's less than nothing on the offensive line. And I don't think they're going to choose to go that route, but let's say you wanted to add some depth at right tackle. There's not a lot there. You're going to do that in the draft, too.
Right. All right. 641-1010 if you want to get in before we're done, but time's running short here. Fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking Jaguar fans what drives you. By the way, today I had 3-kilo-class Soviet subs. Was my three keys picture on the Facebook page.
Sweet.
I'm running out of keys to go with here, and I'm trying to avoid the kind that Miami Vice specialized in. So, you know, I may have to start recycling some of my keys here.
It's a different kind of kilo.
It is. But that's what I went with today. Tony, what did we get in response to the question?
From Tommy, 100% ball security, pound the rock, hit luck early and often. From Clay, blitz heavy, take shots downfield with Marquise Lee, and run, Denard. From Paolo, get Denard going often and early, cover over the top of defense and tackle. From Eric, we just need wins. That's the keys. Win up front, win the turnover battle, and just win. And there you go.
Just win. All right, there's your key to victory. Get a victory, right?
Win, baby.
Just win. I do think Denard... And the running game as a whole, but particularly Denard, obviously, plays a big role in this game if the Jags are to keep it competitive. Because you look what New England was able to do to him last week, really just push him around at the line of scrimmage. And Jonas Gray went for 201 yards and four touchdowns. Now, he is a physical, between-the-tackles kind of runner, but Denard has held his own in that capacity this year. So I got to believe, for me, that is among the most important keys to this game if they're going to make it a four-quarter game.
Well, you know, New England used that sixth offensive lineman on over 30 snaps. Not something the Jags have done outside of short goal line yardage. I mean, at this point, why don't they try it a little bit?
Or, just the return of Mercedes Lewis at least gives you a better facsimile of that, mm-hmm. you know, than anything else you've had up to this point.
Yeah, and Indianapolis leads the league in time of possession, which is part of the reason why they lead the league in yards, or third in yards. So, you know, if you try to slow the game down a little bit and, you know, limit the time they have on the field by running it, you can maybe, you know, stay in it for longer.
What else other than running the football? I mean, turnovers are always, certain implied. Things are always a key, right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the keys I'll list, it's also implied, is Colts have the worst red zone defense in the league. Well, they're not doing something right, so capitalize on that.
Score touchdowns. Yeah. Right.
And then the other thing is Indianapolis has had a ton of big plays against them. So the 20-yard plays are going to happen against them. They don't allow any 40 or 50 yarders. Those are backbreakers.
Right. Don't allow the quick strike over the top that goes for 6 points automatically. What about you?
Going back and watching the first Colts game this year, the defense was depressingly bad in that game. In the first half, it was just awful. You had some different pieces out there. Winston Guy was a principal piece of that defense and was a culprit in a lot of the problems that they were having that day. And obviously, he's not here anymore. So they were around Andrew Luck at times in that game, but only got him to the ground the 2 times. They had a chance to get 4 or 5 sacks in the first half of that game and just didn't get it done. So I think one of the keys is when you get to him, you have to put him on the ground, because it's when he escapes that pressure that he's creating big plays for that Colts offense. It's easier said than done when it comes to getting Andrew Luck to the ground, but that's something that the Jags have to be able to do. I do think they need to be able to run the ball effectively. And again, I'll keep saying it until they take advantage of it. If they're going to be able to run the ball as well as they have for the last month, then at some point somebody needs to use the middle of that field where the linebackers are vacating, because they're having to step up and play the run. And to this point, they've had nobody that can take advantage of it. Is it Marquise Lee? Is it Mercedes Lewis? I don't know. But somebody needs to be the guy that can step into that void that they're creating in defenses that they haven't yet.
I think it's more likely Mercedes Lewis, at least in the short term. I've seen nothing from Marquise Lee. I know the opportunity is there, but the opportunity is there by default. He didn't create this opportunity on his own.
Like you said, it doesn't necessarily mean he's ready for it.
Right.
He's going to get it.
It is there. And look, I think that's it. You don't want Allen Robinson to go out, because it's not like he's a finished product either. He's done pretty well for himself, has been a reliable third down target for Blake Bortles this year, but you've got to get something going with Marquise Lee. I think you don't want this to be a completely lost season going into, and you know, it was kind of that way with Cecil Short's rookie year, and then he got it going in year two. So it's not like you can't do that, but you'd like to see Marquise Lee maybe have some positive memories to reflect on in the offseason.
Yeah, and I would, I would find Lewis early, and I'd give Marquise a shot down the field early. Because a lot of his stuff so far has been on the boundaries, on the sidelines, where he has had to drag the toes to make the catch. So he's not a guy who's going to make a lot of happen on a bubble. He's not going to be, the jet sweep didn't work
but
for
they,
him.
But that's what they tried they with tried. Him early.
Yeah, so now I think now it's time to,
see if he can stretch it.
Yeah.
Cecil, and I heard somebody else referencing this yesterday too. I think it was Brent Martineau, probably a separate conversation, but I talked with Cecil for the pregame, and he's like, man, he is a different caliber of athlete than we have at the wide receiver position, talking about Marquise Lee. So, he recognizes the raw material is evident to see, I'm paraphrasing the way he put it. So hopefully, he can start to refine that and get his feet under him and make an impact. What are we going to see from you and read from you in the next few days?
Well, in Sunday's paper, I'll have the main story, which is on the tackling, and have sort of a breakdown game by game of how many they missed and what the concerns are or not concerns. And then the other story is, talk to Bowenko a little bit. 7 centers who are rookies are starting in this league, which is pretty remarkable considering none of them were in the first 2 rounds of the draft. So, okay, why are centers being able to make that transition quicker?
Remember Weston Richburg?
He's starting at guard for the Giants.
He actually just got benched, right. which is interesting because he was a much bigger name guy.
He was the first one off the board.
Right, and was thought to maybe be a late first-round pick, might go in the late first round. And
then Swanson, the Arkansas kid, was drafted in the 3rd round. He's starting at guard for Detroit.
Right, but, Bowenko has been one of the major success stories of this draft class, to be sure, and, pretty good hit there. It's not like I could grade any center in college. I don't watch them play. I don't focus on them in the National Football League. I certainly don't focus on them in college, but just based on the rankings last year, all the ones they passed by, I think Polanco is probably outdoing a lot of them at this point in time.
Yeah, and you know, I think he's a guy you move forward with going into 2015, which is important because it's a sixth-round pick, and not only did you hit on it, you hit on a starter. That's
exactly.
One last hole to fill.
Right. I mean, you got when you look at that line, and we'll wrap up this final thought because we're almost out of time here. Jokel, Linder, Polanco, return, no doubt, starters. Did the other guys, do you feel the same way about them, including Beatles, despite the money they spent on them?
I think as of right now, I would think all five are back as the first team in training camp. You know, this, if
that they won't spend their capital, whether it's in the draft or free agency, to automatically upgrade. Maybe bring in competition, but not go out there to seek the X of the future.
Yes, that's my, unless Pastor really falls off, he would be the, if you had to rank him 1 through 5, he'd probably be the most likely to be replaced. But I think if he holds steady, you know, if they would draft an offensive line, but maybe not 4th, 5th round.
All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks to the Tom Bush family of dealerships. They bring you the fan feedback spotlight every day of the week here on Jaguars Today. You can always weigh in on Twitter or on the Facebook page as well, or always by picking up the phone and calling 641-1010. And we appreciate those guys. Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor on the program. Thanks to Johnny Unitas Jr. for joining us for a conversation. The new book he has out, Johnny, You, and Me, available at Amazon.com and better bookstores everywhere, as they like to say. Ryan O'Halloran with the Florida Times Union. Give him a follow on Twitter if you don't already, at Ryan O'Halloran. It's that simple. Have a good trip to Indy. I hope it's better than the worst trip of all time, which was the last road trip you took with this football team.
Well, it's going to be better because it's shorter, and we're staying downtown Indy, which I've been several times.
Downtown Indy is great. I love downtown Indy.
So have a good dinner Saturday night. And
I have not been to every Super Bowl venue, but if they played them in Indy every single year, if they were going to play them in one spot, that would get my vote. More so even than New Orleans. I'm talking about for my own personal ease and convenience. That was a well-run situation.